Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Please join us, call in, and or just listen in as we discuss the comparison between the treatment and sentencing of prisoners in other countries compared to mass incarceration and the treatment and sentencing of the incarcerated individuals in U.S. prisons. Eras of mass incarceration has seen the U.S. prison population grow by 500% in the past 30 years. More than 2.3 million Americans are incarcerated in our U.S. prisons today. And the U.S. has the highest incarceration rate in the world, 5 times more than that in England and 12 times more than that in Japan. Over the past 40 years, the number of people held in prisons and jails in the United States per capita has more than quadrupled. The two best states for corrections, as they say, and it is pretty well known, is New Hampshire and Maine, which both also rank in the top three for safety. We have New Hampshire and Maine in the top three for safety, which goes to show you that some states in the United States are doing the right thing. We have Maine and Vermont, the two states that have never taken away the rights of prisoners to vote. That says something for all other states. What is the purpose of taking away the rights of prisoners to vote when they have done nothing to the country? Simply that they have committed an offense, and many are wrongfully convicted, and many, again, are mentally ill or addicted. So what is the purpose of taking away their rights to vote? Do we have legislative members in this country who are afraid that if they allow the voting to take place, that perhaps the right politicians will get in? Perhaps the fair ones will get in? Think about it. Think about why they have not allowed these prisoners the rights to vote. And think about the injustices that many people in leadership roles in this country, the unfairness, the injustices that they have committed. We also have to look at the reason for mass incarceration. We're looking at mass incarceration in this country and treatment in this country that exists nowhere else in the world. Mariam Jacobs was going to come on today to join us, but unfortunately, she had to meet with a client and other things came up. This is someone from another country, a psychosocial therapist, that not only talks frequently about the injustices in this country, but she speaks of the mass incarceration compared to other countries. Mass incarceration in the United States, where people are profiting off of prisons. Some of the large corporations that are making money off of prisoners, they're using the inmates, the prisoners, to produce their frozen foods, and they process beef for patties. These are the prisoners now. They also process bread and milk and chicken products, and that's McDonald's. These incarcerated individuals are making like $0.96 a day to produce for these large corporations that are making billions of dollars through their corporations. Wendy's has also been identified as relying on prison labor to reduce its cost of operations. Inmates also process beef for patties. We have JCPenney's and Kmart. They both sell jeans made by the incarcerated individuals in the Tennessee prisons. American Airlines and the car rental companies, Avis, use inmates to take reservations. Victoria's Secrets, the company uses inmates to cut the production costs. In South Carolina, female inmates were used to sew products. Also, inmates reportedly have been used to replace made-in tags with made-in USA tags. Fidelity Investment, 401,000 or other investments are held by Fidelity. And in some cases, some of our money invested by the monies that have been invested by Fidelity is used for prison labor or in other operations related to the prison industry complex. The investment firm funds the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which has created laws authorizing and increasing the use of inmates in manufacturing. Walmart, the company uses inmates for manufacturing purposes. The company hires inmates to clean products of UPC barcodes so that the products can be resold. Starbucks, the company uses inmates to cut costs as well. Starbucks subcontractor, Signature Packaging Solutions, hired Washington State prisoners to package holiday coffees. Sprint provides telecommunication services. Inmates are used in call centers. Verizon, inmates provide telecommunication services. 12 major corporations benefiting from the prison industrial complex. Prison labor in the United States is referred to as insourcing under the Work Opportunity Tax Credit. Employers receive a tax credit of $2,400 for every work-released inmate they employ as a reward for hiring risky target groups. The workers are not only cheap labor, but they're also considered easier to control. They also tend to be African-American males. Companies are free to avoid providing benefits like health insurance or sick days. They also don't need to worry about unions, demands for vacation time, raises, or family issues. These are some of the things we have to look at. With all that productivity, the inmates only make 90 cents a day in most cases. 90 cents a day. Can you imagine working 6 hours to 8 hours a day for 96 cents? Again, who profits from the incarceration? Number of companies that profit from mass incarceration, there's over 4,000. Plus annual cost to the families of prison phone calls and commissary purchases, $2.9 billion. Perhaps of formerly incarcerated people who are unemployed, 27%. The average daily rate or wage of incarcerated workers, 86 cents. Private prisons are by no means behind mass incarceration as a whole. America's love of incarceration is so deeply entrenched that if you imagine every state as its own nation. Now, they say Massachusetts, which has the lowest incarceration rate in the U.S., which I doubt, but would still rank ninth among the world. But as long as someone can make money off locking others up, there will always be motivation to keep those cages around and even build more, whether digital or physical. Let's be clear, there's a lot of money in private prisons. In 2017, the Prison Policy Initiative reported that the government pays private companies about $4 billion a year to operate prisons. In practical terms, there isn't much separating private prisons from public ones. They both incarcerate people, and like their public counterparts, private prisons can operate at the local, state, or federal level. The differences between them is just that one is the responsibility of the government, while the other is contracted out to private companies who are paid by the government to keep the facilities operating. You know, these are some of the things that are really terrifying, because money seems to be the root of mass incarceration and all the problems that are going on in these prisons. So what's the problem with private prisons? Proponents of private prisons often claim they are cheaper than the public alternative. This is debatable for a few reasons. Private prisons tend to be picky about whom they incarcerate so that they can keep their costs low. Think about it. Now, we have to look at these things, and we have to really start wondering, what are we going to do about it? Dorothy Jean D'Agostino, myself, and others are trying to do something about it. Starting in the month of June 2023, we've been working on these issues, and we've been working on the areas that we'd like to see everyone focus on. In order to do these things, we have to have people interested enough in making changes so that we can see positive changes in our penal system, lessen the mass incarceration so that we're more on an equal level with other countries. And I'd like to have all of you not only listen in, but call in. State your concern. Talk about how you would like to help in any way you can. Now, we have two callers on the line with us. We have 508. Want to state your name, please?
This is Donna Winan. Hi, Leona.
Hi, how are you, Donna? And I'm glad you came on because these are the issues that we want to talk about, too, are the mental health issues. Marion Jacobs, unfortunately, could not make it today. She sent me a message about an hour and a half ago. She has a client. But we were going to be talking about the mental health issues as well. And I'm glad you came on because I've been letting people know about FFIMI and the work that you've been doing. So I'm going to let you introduce yourself to the audience. And then I'd like to have Dorothy Jean Agostino also introduce herself once again. So please, Donna, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your organization?
Oh, sure. Thanks, Leona. I'm Donna Winant. I'm the founder and director of FEMI, which stands for Family and Friends of Individuals with Mental Illness. And what we do is advocate for those who are justice involved, for those enmeshed within the criminal justice system. And our mission is to advocate for persons suffering from serious mental illness and even mental illness. Maybe not the most serious mental illness, which would be schizophrenia, bipolar, serious depression. So the person suffering from mental illness and involved in the criminal justice system, we want to assure that they are provided a continuum of proper psychiatric care, treatment, and services across the entire spectrum of the legal and justice systems. So that's within the jails, the prisons. There's so much medical neglect. There's so much psychiatric neglect. There's so much accumulated trauma because of inhumane conditions, inhumane treatment. And, you know, we're working to change as much of that as we possibly can. Our voices are going out loud and clear. There are people trying to stifle our voices, and we've just got to fight back and fight for what's right, and that's treating human beings like human beings.
Thank you, Donna. I've been reiterating the fact that you've been trying to get DMH, Department of Mental Health, more involved in going into the prison. And I bring this up at all of our shows now because it's very important, the work that you're doing to bring them on board. And I want you to talk more about that. But I'm going to introduce right now Dorothy Jean Agostino, who also has been an advocate for some time, and she is going to introduce herself as well. So, Dorothy, are you on with us?
Yes. Good afternoon, Leona. Good afternoon, Donna. My name is Dorothy Jean D'Agostino. I have a son incarcerated at FBI Frackville doing life without parole. He is working with mental illness situations in the prison where he is. He went through the courts. He sits there and he listens. He doesn't disrupt what they're saying, but he listens. And then when they want something said and explained, they will ask. He's on call 24/7 for anyone that has a breakdown or needs to talk. He's right there. He graduated with high honors at Brookside Technical School for criminal justice and criminal law. He got a very high diploma, and he does that. He also is there and he gets 98 cents a day for sometimes 12 hours, and that's his base pay. And I've been there 24/7, 25 years, and no matter how long it takes, I will still be there. I'm very proud of him, with him going into the path of helping people with mental illness. It is very, very bad. And they don't have any therapist there to talk to them. They more or less push them right under the rug, as if to say, oh, well, you're in prison, deal with it, and hand them a Tylenol. Well, that's not going to get it. So we have to really see how the issues of mental illness is affecting so many people that are incarcerated. They may have a number, but they are a human being. Thank you.
And thank you, Dorothy. And I was going to say, this is one of the things that when Miriam Jacobs does come on, she speaks of this often, that in those countries, they do not call prisoners by numbers. They call them by names. They're more humane about the treatment and the way they interact with these incarcerated individuals. The correctional officers in those countries, they talk to the prisoners and interact with the prisoners, the incarcerated individuals, as though they're talking to friends. They keep that humanity in the forefront when they're dealing with these individuals, whether they're mentally ill or not. We have to look at the respect that they deserve, because they, too, are human beings. Prior to Donna coming on, and maybe Dorothy, I was speaking about the corporations that are profiting off of the incarcerated individuals. And Dorothy just briefly spoke up about that with her son. He has his degree now in the work that he's doing, or his certificate, and he is doing some major work with the incarcerated individual having psychological issues as well. But he makes, I believe she said, $86 or $96 a day, which to me...
96 cents a day.
I'm sorry, I keep saying dollars, because in the normal realm, a psychiatrist or psychologist would be making close to that. I mean, would be making more than that, but almost as much as an individual on the outside would make. But I wanted to bring these things up because, as I said earlier, we have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses. And I mentioned this yesterday as well, because people don't seem to realize when someone commits an offense, everyone says that person has to be crazy. The person has to be crazy to do what they did. We have to look at these children that are born innocent. They didn't come into this world with the intention of doing any harm to anyone or committing any offense at all. So somewhere along the line, as they grew up, someone failed them, whether it was in the biological homes, in the foster homes, the communities, wherever it might be. Something happened to cause these individuals to have psychological problems. And unfortunately, some are born with a defect, which causes them to be born with some type of mental illness. But we have a country we're living in right now that is very dysfunctional, and we can't expect anything more from the young ones or from those incarcerated as we expect of ourselves. And we need to also try to maintain our own sanity. So let's look at these incarcerated individuals, and let's look at these advocates that are fighting hard to bring about some normality in our penal system with our incarcerated, mentally ill, and addicted. So Donna, again, can you talk a little bit about the work you've been trying to do in getting the Department of Mental Health involved?
Yeah, it's been ongoing for a number of years, so there's a number of avenues. But when Governor Charlie Baker was governor, one of the things after reading the DOJ report is that I asked for a panel, and we had already had worked with Mary Lou Sutters, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, but he expanded that panel, and we are now, my organization, FEMI, we're crafting a family advisory council. So these, you know, we'll have selected members who will serve for a period of either 1 to 2 years. We're still developing, but we're making good progress right now. And they will be the voice of the family members to get more family unification. You know, one of the most disturbing things of dehumanizing people is breaking them away from their families. So we want to have, you know, a way for families to contact the jail and prison and talk to a clinician, talk to someone at the jail, whether they're mentally ill or not, to, you know, voice concerns, to ask questions, to open up communication. So that is one of the things we're doing. So that's called the FAC, the F-A-C, the Family Advisory Council. So that's one thing on our plate. We've also worked, and we've gotten credit from some of the sheriffs. Actually, at the State House, they credited FEMI for, you know, making some of these inroads and opening up communications. Middlesex has done a great job. Now families can contact Middlesex County Jail. It's just a drop in the bucket, but it's us. And they've also credited us with, you know, pushing for a continuum of care. So what happens if someone with serious mental illness is put into Bridgewater State Hospital for evaluation? And after the evaluation, it is said, yes, they need care, you know, and that's problematic. They need care to gain competency only to go into the system. But the fact is that they do try to stabilize them and give them the right medications. And if they're getting a stability and a right medication, and then they move on through the system to a jail or a prison to stand trial, then that medication can change because each jail has a budget in each prison, and they have what's called a formulary. So if that particular medication that's helping someone stay stable is not available because they don't have the budget, it's not in their formulary, they will just change that medication, and that person can quickly decompensate. Here's a person struggling with a lifelong disease of mental illness and not given the medication that was helping them. So that is one issue that FEMI is pushing, and we have made a few inroads. They're doing long-term injectables so that some of those medications can be maintained once that person is removed from Bridgewater State Hospital to a county jail. So that's one good thing that's coming out of our work. But there's so many, you know, we have kind of like an octopus. We have a lot of legs going out, and there's, as you know, Leona, there's so many needs for change. I'm concerned about things like solitary confinement. I'm very enthusiastic about getting free phone calls. Again, that's something that deunifies and destroys and harms families who can barely afford those expensive phone calls. So there's so many issues, but you know, we have to sometimes prioritize, and I do prioritize, but I'll also dabble in some of the other issues because they're so problematic and because we care about the whole big picture.
Exactly. And you know what, the good thing about it is solitary confinement and restrictive housing, and you can find that on the internet, they're supposed to be doing away with that in Massachusetts. And they said this year. So hopefully they will get rid of the solitary and restrictive housing, because it's been said so many times, as you mentioned, the psychological damage that is being done to these people that are in solitary and restrictive housing, especially a lot of them for years. I don't know if you remember, or Dorothy Dean, if you remember, but they had a while back on Facebook, someone had posted, they had a person, a young man in solitary confinement, for I believe it was 460-something days. And then when he came out, he was barking like a dog. You know, these are the kind of things to me that's so inhumane and so painful to even hear about it. And this has to stop. It really does. There's no reason or need for it. The other one that you were talking about is the needs that we have to look at in this country. There are so many, as you mentioned. And this is why it's so important for people to join forces, to come together. And we were talking about this event we're trying to do in June. And I encourage people to come in to do it, to talk about these issues. We need to get the Department of Mental Health involved. And as Donna mentioned, phone calls, letter writing, emails to the Department of Mental Health, even the Psychological Association. We need to start writing to them and calling them and emailing them and encouraging them or challenging them to start doing more. They're not doing anything for these incarcerated individuals. Organizations like Donors is great because they're focused in on the help, finding the help, getting the right people or organizations involved. But even they have to have your cooperation out there. So please join us. Please try to get more involved. Donna, I'll tell you, I really appreciate the work that you've been doing. You have been going into the prisons. You have been, even with Mass General Hospital, trying to get independent providers involved from hospitals outside the penal system. We know that contracted agencies or contracted providers are not really qualified in many cases or experienced. So these are some issues that we need to focus on as well. Dorothy, what is your feedback on all of this?
My feedback is, I don't know if you are aware of solitary confinement is supposed to be a short-term situation, but there have been men and women in solitary confinement for up to 12 years. Now, when you're in solitary confinement or the RHU, which is restricted, you are just given the cot with a mattress. If they want to give you a blanket, they'll give you a blanket. But other than that, you have nothing, nothing at all except four walls and the cot. And that alone can really break a person down for mental illness. And I wish they would do away with it. But then you have protective custody. That is almost the same thing, similar, because you have to have protection so you don't get beat up or something like that. But solitary confinement is a big joke, and they get paid for those little rooms. They get paid a good amount of money daily for keeping them full. And people are not aware of it. They get $1,500 a day to keep the person in solitary confinement. And you are fed what they call a bread loaf. And that is all food scraps from the week. They make it into a loaf, and that's what you get for dinner and breakfast.
So, Donna, how do people join your organization? How would they go about joining?
They can contact us at ffimi.inquiry@gmail.com. And they can leave a message, I am interested in, you know, helping your organization. And that's managed by that email address is managed by one of our steering committee members. And very heartening, Leona, because we have had our voice cut off at Bridgewater State Hospital. I'll explain that in a minute. And it was disheartening. We had been having family members had been having Monday night meetings once every week and Thursday morning meetings every week. So that was 8 meetings a week where families could get together, offer support to one another, offer advice from one another, learn about what's happening at the hospital, the day-to-day operations. So at one point they said, every other Thursday we'd like to do a presentation. You can meet the staff by Zoom, and, you know, they can tell you what they do, occupational therapists. And that was pretty good. So that brings us to 6 meetings, and that's still good. And then what happened is I actually do art classes. I have a background in the arts, and I do art classes at the hospital with the family. So it's one really excellent thing that the hospital has allowed me to do. And so they said, instead of your in-person meeting with the administration on Monday, on one of those Mondays, we'll do the art classes. And the family member said, that's fine with us. You know, it's it seems better to have that family connection and art class and fun together than getting nowhere in these meetings, because we really got anywhere. We had to keep pushing. So then we were down to 5 meetings. And then last month we met with the DOC, the vice president of WellPath, who manages the the health care. And arbitrarily, just like that, without even discussing it with the families, we were told we're going to have a once-a-month meeting. So that was pretty disheartening, because it cuts off immediately our ability to reach one another, to know one another, so that we can advocate together. And what happened, Leona, is that I gave a talk at my church, and 3 people who I had no idea had backgrounds. Some of them have backgrounds as prison chaplains. They have backgrounds working with disabled children. They have backgrounds with prison ministry. They have backgrounds with psychiatric hospitals. And we have 3 potential volunteers, because I got up and spoke what was on my heart, as you know, far as caring for this population and the need for compassion. And 3 people have stepped up and now are in line to be to meet with us. And we have a certain criteria. We share with them what we do. And so even though Bridgewater's trying to cut us off, we're finding ways. We're unstoppable, because we found ways. I testified at the State House. My group met with Senator Cindy Friedman. I'm writing to Dr. Phil, trying to get on the Dr. Phil show. I'm going to do what it takes to get the voice out there. And thanks to you, Leona, here I am today, unexpectedly, speaking. So the voices of the families are trying to just shut us off and not know what's going on at the hospital, and we're going to do it one way or another, God willing.
You just said it. Amen. You know something I say, God has a purpose for what's going on right now. It's not me. God has a purpose for what is going on right now, and this is going to be successful. You know, they say when you're doing something right, that's when you're under oppression. Them trying to prevent you from going in on a regular basis into the prison for these talks or whatever, that's because you're doing something right, and this is their fear. You know, it's yes. And people need to get involved. This is the time for so many people who have loved ones incarcerated, especially if they went into prison because of psychological issues or if they have mental illnesses. This is the time they need to get involved. And that going to church, you see what happens? You go to your congregation, and you learn there's others in there that can also join forces with you in certain ways.
That's true. And, you know, here these family members were really involved, and it kind of happened organically. We were going to just have a support group, but when we were sharing with each other, we were also identifying common issues, so we began to advocate together, and that's why they have cut us off. And so, you know, as I said, it seemed to be disheartening, but if need be, we're going to have to find other ways, and we are going to address it. We have written letters to the vice president of the company saying, look, this is not right, you know, to be arbitrarily cut off. It impedes our ability to, you know what's happening with our loved ones and to work for their improvement. So we will see tomorrow if some of that isn't reinstated or not. And if not, Senator Cindy Friedman wants reports, and we'll just keep having to go out to other, you know, venues to get the word out.
Yeah, this is awesome. This is awesome. You know, and this is another thing I really want to encourage too, is whether it's the rabbis, whether it's the temples, whether it's a mosque, whether it's a church, whatever the case may be, we can all play a part in trying to do the right things to bring this mass incarceration down and in sync with other countries. And again, the treatment makes a big difference in how the success rate will fall, because right now, There's so many abuses going on inside. There's so much injustices going on inside. And people are not being treated as human beings, especially if there's psychological issues involved as well. These are the areas we really need to focus on.
Amen.
Yesterday I was kind of frustrated because we have people that say they want to come on board, that they really want to focus on these injustices, and they really want to focus on this upcoming event in June. We've had a lot of people that want to be involved, but they have not come on. One that did come on said that she had too many commitments, and I really felt bad because we all have too many commitments. But when it comes to our loved ones inside, and the loved ones of others incarcerated, we need to come together. And that is, should be the main commitment right now, to lower the incarceration rates in the United States.
Absolutely.
I was also going to say, real quickly, I believe it was Maine and New Hampshire have the were told or believed to have been the two states in the United States who has the I'll have to look that up because I don't have it in front of me right now. Yeah, I'll have to look that up because was it Maine and New Hampshire? Okay, Donna, you started to say something, or Dorothy?
I might have been going to say something else, but I'd like to address Dorothy and say, you know, kudos to your son. God bless him. May God be embedded in his heart, and may that be healing for not only the people he's working to serve, but to himself. I know there's so much trauma. Dorothy, I went to the Prisoner Legal Services 50th year celebration this a few months ago, and I met two people, one male, one female, who had recently come out of incarceration, and Eugene, and it's okay to say his name because he is willing and able, and he is even willing to come on your show at some point, Leona, but he had he was in solitary confinement for 14 years out of the 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you could feel the PTSD. Mm-hmm. And yet he's bravely there because he's now working to help other people who are incarcerated and being a voice for him. And the second person was a female, and I'll just call her by her first initial, which was A. And again, you know, she was almost sitting down, but she was like crouched over in pain. And she was with Stacey Borden, who you know, Leona, who has, you know, opened a home for people coming out of incarceration for women, and her friend A is there with her. We cannot destroy people like this. You just have to wonder how people can live with the abuse that they give to other human beings. It's unfathomable to my heart, you know, and I just pray that God infuses compassion into their hearts. That is the cry of my heart right now.
I'm
so grateful for your son who's a light in a dark place. It's phenomenal.
Yes. And you have to, they can manipulate you a lot of times, and he can see that. And the one young man says, I guess I can't manipulate you. And Shane says, I didn't say anything. He said, I can tell. I can't play wolf. And Shane says, I'm here to help, and I'm here to listen. More so listening to what you need and what is bothering you. And it is a shame. And the correctional officers do not help any person that has a mental illness. They more or less play on it, and they add on to it to let them see if they will break. And it's a shame. They need help. They don't have any counseling. They have no they have no classes. They have nothing. They sit in their cell. What can you achieve sitting in your cell 23 hours a day or solitary confinement 24 hours a day? And as I said, it is supposed to be a short term. It is not a short term. A lot of people out here do not know it. There has been people in solitary confinement for 14, 20 years, 25 years. Nobody knows about this. Sad. Anybody would break being in there like that.
You know, like
we
I said,
help.
With the homeless shelters, they have all this funding to house people in the streets, to house people at night at 5 o'clock until 7 in the morning or vice versa. But one of the things they fail to do during the day, they put a roof over their head at night and they put them out on the streets in the morning. So they're not really benefiting other than having a roof over their head at night. They need to bring in volunteer psychologists and psychiatrists, occupational therapists, social workers, substance abuse counselors. There's so many people out there that would volunteer to go into these homeless shelters to do these things during the daytime, but they put them out. And the same thing happens in the prisons. They have a lot of people incarcerated who are not afforded the opportunity to take programs, to participate, and they're in their cells most of the time without anything to do. This is the time, as you say, to start going in, having them have group therapy or something. And I'll tell you, you mentioned manipulation, but if you notice, if you relate to an incarcerated individual, you let them know that you care and you want to know how you can help. You want to know that you relate to them and you understand what they're going through. They will start opening up to you. They will talk to you about things that they will not talk to anyone else about. I remember years ago, I had set her up with counseling. She was telling me all these things that she wouldn't tell her counselor. I told my supervisor. I didn't know what to do because it was confidentiality. I said, I don't know what to do because she's given me all this information about herself, but she's not talking to her counselor. This is the thing. We have to be able to open ourselves up to listen to these people, to show them that we care so that they will open up to, even if it's us at this point in time, because we're dealing with prisoners. We're dealing with people that can't come out. So this is the time. If we just showed them that compassion, and since 2004, I've had people who apply for services throughout the years, they would write and they would talk about the things that they went through, what really landed them in prison. And there's so much people don't understand about the stumbling or the reason people are incarcerated. But they will open up if they have that opportunity and they know that they can trust the people that are relating to them, working with them. The prisons really need a change. They need to bring in people that are qualified or that have a heart to be able to work and relate to the people that they're working with behind those prison walls.
That is so true. And I had an appointment this morning, and matter of fact, we had to go past the Salvation Army, which is so, so sad. There's a little park there. There was about 25 people that were homeless sleeping on the cement. Now, that is sad. What are they? They have a place. They have a shelter at night till 7 in the morning. Sometimes some of them leave at 6 o'clock, that you have to go out until 5 o'clock in that evening, sleeping on the cement slab. That's terrible.
It is.
And that's right across from the Salvation Army, the park. But where do they go? They have no place to go. This is the time that they should be able to play games or something, Monopoly or something, do something with their hands, do something with their mind, be able to do something, not just sleep on a cement block. That is hard.
I do have to say one thing about the Salvation Army. I've always supported them. The Salvation Army, they not only have a chapel, but they go into the prisons when people are soon to be released. They start working with them. And they also have We have the food program where they donate the food. There's a lot of things the Salvation Army does. Teen Challenge. I remember one time I was at a Teen Challenge store, and I was talking to some of the former incarcerated that were working for Teen Challenge and were staying at the Teen Challenge home. And they said Teen Challenge works them 60 hours a week. They don't pay them. They give them a roof over their head, but they work them. And the products that they sell are very expensive, you know, for a thrift shop. So there's a difference between Teen Challenge and also the Salvation Army. Salvation Army does a lot of good. And unfortunately, if they could house these people in the streets, I'm sure they would. But they have a lot that they do with these incarcerated coming out.
So, Leona, some of the things, you know, that I'd like to see is just one of the things when we have this Family Advisory Council I've been working on is how to do some pilot programs. And you gave me a suggestion. This would be between the inmates and the prisoners, correction officers. And you gave me the advice that, you know, have inmates choose the correction officers for this pilot program. So the pilot program, I have a bunch of R's, and my R's are root causes, restoration, restitution, recovery, rehabilitation, redemption. And what I'd like to see is a whole cultural change and have maybe a kindness project. So these COs who would be the creme de la creme, hopefully, you know, would be like maybe not a father figure, but a good, strong role model and a mentor. And you would have also community involvement and have, you know, people in the community who are vetted come in and volunteer for classes and support to validate these people, to teach them skills. You know, so there would be different pilot programs. One could be the Kindness Project, and it's been done before. And let's see, it's by a woman. She's a PhD. Her name is Karenza Lockwood, and she's given the correction officers new direction and helping them to do something like this, to have a program where they can mentor and kind of like what Miriam Jacob is saying, you know, talk to the inmates, listen to the inmates and work with them to be productive and have programming. And some of the programming that's been done, there's an agroponics down in Springfield jail, county jail. And so these, some of the inmates, they grow lettuces and produce that helps feed other inmates and the community. And then there's people in some certain jails are setting up coffee cells. So they have the inmates themselves write up their own business plan. And they, you know, they do everything. They figure out how and, you know, where they're going to order the coffee and how much it will cost. And then other inmates can earn the money, you know, earn not real money, but can earn the credits to come buy coffee. So you set up these, you know, it's not just one, oh, look what we're doing. Here's this little coffee cafe. No, do it in different parts of the jail so that, you know, more inmates can be involved. So it's just something I'm working on. I'm making myself notes different ways. And, you know, at some point I'm going to have it all laid out on paper. I have some of that now. But one other thing, this was interesting. U.S. prisons are actually considering, this is federal now, Justice Department's First Step Act. It's called Sparks of Light, and it's U.S. prisons to consider Torah study for early release. So these Jewish leaders are going in, you know, and Torah can mean either the first five books of the Old Testament or the prophets and the entire Old Testament, but they do these Torah studies, and you don't have to be Jewish to take part. And by doing this, and There's more than 30 classes designed for students, and by doing this, you can earn, you learn healthy coping skills, and you can also earn early release. So that's, you know, that's kind of a really cool program. It's done by Alice Institute. So, and it's federal, so I like that. So, there, you know, things like that where people can be productive, you know, studying Torah, which is the Bible, studying, you know, and also being taught coping skills and principles. Some of these people, you know, they can learn strong principles that will help them to grow when they return to society to be the best that they can be. And, you know, the coffee, running a business, a little coffee business, and learning those skills. There's so many things that can be done and should be done. I think, Dorothy, you mentioned some of the inmates. They're just sitting in their cells. And it's not good for human beings. It's not mentally healthy to not be productive and feel good about yourself.
Exactly. And even solitary, you're only allowed one shower a week.
You know, that's
and no books and no programming. I believe they're required to give books and programming, and it isn't done. I read that in the DOJ report.
If they want to give it to them.
Correct, and they're supposed
to. Solitaire is a punishment. Also, you mentioned about the federal prison. Is that they are qualified to gain good time then, correct?
No.
What's that, Dorothy?
Are they allowed, with these classes and everything, does that allow them to get good time?
Yes, the Torah study, the federal, it's a Torah study program developed by Aleph Institute, and it's officially recognized by the U.S. Bureau of Prisons as an approved evidence-based recidivism reduction option, and it's part of the Justice Department. So, yes, they can earn early release by taking these classes.
And good time. What state is that being allowed in?
I think it's a, you know, it's wherever, whatever states allow it. Let me just see if I can find that on this article.
I think that pilot project is awesome, plan, a project like that.
Yeah.
The federal programs are so different than the state programs, and the federal programs offer so much more.
Yeah, and this is a federal program. It's called the First Step Act. It was instituted in 2018. It doesn't say where the classes have been, but it says there are more than 1,200 men and women enrolled in Aleph's 32 courses, and approximately 8,000 people have participated over the years since the 2018 onset.
Do they award a certificate for taking that?
I would think they get some kind of credentials since it is recognized toward, you know, toward early release, but it doesn't specify in this article.
They should be able to get a certificate saying that they finished the program.
Yes, I would think so. I would think that they would document that. It also says that they have classes on anger management, parenting, combating recidivism, being a productive member of society. So these are very, very good things.
Really?
And, you know, it's done by, and it's both Jewish and Gentile people.
Okay.
That, you know,
anger
that
management
participants
is wonderful.
Good.
Yes.
And
so, you know,
correctional officers also need that.
Yes,
you know,
that's true.
Someone mentioned the other day, too, about anger management for correctional officers and officials, but also drug testing. But, Donna, real quickly, you mentioned the, what was it, six or seven R's, the the R's. I wanted to ask you, some of these things, if we could get those out to the groups, the Facebook groups that we network with, about the project you talk about, but also the work that we're doing to encourage them to participate and letting them know about these projects you speak of and other things that you're working on, as well as you, Dorothy. We need to start sharing these things with the groups.
Yes.
With those in these various groups that we belong to, and encourage them to join to join other groups so that they can start networking as well. But I think that's an awesome idea with this project, the pilot project, and the the restoration and the retribution and I believe you mentioned 7 of them.
Yeah, it would be good for like correction officers to understand some of the root causes. Let's get more than a superficial understanding of trauma and then work toward restoration. You know, if the correction officers, as you said, if some of the inmates can, I'd like to see it expanded throughout the whole prison, but as a pilot program, let the inmates pick some of these correction officers, and I believe it would thrive, and I believe it would, succeed. So you look, they would look at the root causes, have empathy, work toward restoration, and even restitution. It would be healing to the inmates, to feel like they could do some type of restitution by giving back to their fellow inmates and to the community, and these people growing like the lettuces and the vegetables in this agroponics environment, this jail, they're giving back to the community. Because being cruel and inhumane is not the answer. We know that. So here we got root causes, restoration, restitution, rebuild. What other R's do I have? I like my R's. Recovery, rehabilitation, and finally redemption.
And that results in perfect timing for release. And that is very, very important. All those R's mean so, so much. And these are things that we need to actually keep in mind for June so that when we make these calls, we can actually incorporate that into our calls. It's very important. I really appreciate what you girls are about and motivated, but I'll tell you, it's so important right now to start using all of those and start making these things happen. Retribution, rehabilitation, restorative, all of these things are so vitally important.
Yes.
It's very important. But we have about 2.5 minutes left, so if you girls once again can give the audience your contact information. Audience, please, please, please connect with them. Try to help in any way.
Should I go ahead, Dorothy?
Please, go ahead, Donna. Yes,
okay.
Go ahead.
So, you can learn more about FEMI. We have a lot of our articles. So if you go to FFIMI.blog, you can come up with some of our articles and see the work we're doing. And then to contact us, go to FFIMI.inquiry@gmail.com. And you could request a free quarterly newsletter sent to your email address at this FFIMI.inquiry@gmail.com, or you can let us know if you're interested in, helping out in some way.
And Donna, you do have a Facebook page for FEMI?
Well, we have, we just have the FEMI.blog, but if you look up FFIMI, different articles that we've written and different, different information is there available if you just Google us.
Great.
Very good.
Thank you so much. Dorothy, you want to give your information as well?
Yes, I will. Dorothy Jean D'Agostino, 215-858-0095. If you care to call me, I will answer any questions and help with the June program. We need volunteers. You can, my email address is djeanangel, Angel 04 at yahoo.com, all lowercase.
Great.
And can I just add quickly, Leona, that, you know, some of the inmates have said when they hear their family voices, it helps keep them sane. So even if you're not family, you know, Jesus said, when you clothe someone, you're clothing me. When you visit the sick, you're visiting me. When you go to the prisons, you're visiting me. So, you know, if you can volunteer in some way, inmates need to hear a friendly voice. It's going to help them stay sane in a very difficult situation. It's kind, it's humane, it's compassionate. Reach out.
You know, that's the truth. And Dorothy, you want to give your contact information?
I already did, hon.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was focusing on getting this out, but I want to say one more time for both of you, thank you so much. Donna, keep up the good work with FEMI, and keep focusing on Department of Mental Health. It's so vital that they get involved. I was also going to say ACLU has something on the internet about the same thing, the mass incarceration, a lot of the issues that we spoke of today, mass incarceration and other issues. The type of incarcerated. So that's ACLU and also places like NAMI. I'm hoping NAMI also gets involved. Families Against Mandatory Minimum. I've already been on the phone with them. I've sent people away and they thank you because people are joining their organization as well, which is very vital. So if we all come together as groups and network together in unity, we're going to see these positive changes. And I hope, audience, I hope you're listening. I hope you will all join in. You have Donna's information. You have Dorothy's information. So many others. Also, join FEMI. Join Families, Friends, and Individuals for the Mentally Ill. Join Families Against Mandatory Minimum. Get involved. And I thank you for being on once again, Dorothy. And I thank you, Donna.
Thank you.
I hope, pray. And Donna, you mentioned somebody that would like to come on the show. Anytime anyone wants to come on, let me know. I'll send them an invitation if I have their email address or they can call in. And
thank you.
I hope you'll be back on again with us, Donna. We have you scheduled, I believe, for March 1st. Or did we?
Yes.
Was it March 1st?
No, that was my husband's appointment. I have to drive him home. But we rescheduled it for, where is it? I think it was March 16th.
Yes, that's what it is, March 16th.
Okay.
We will have Donna.
I do have it on my calendar, March 16th.
Can I say one more thing?
Please.
We people, we are their voice behind that glass. What we say, they can't hear, but we can bring it to outside. From the inside. Remember, we are their voice. They don't have one in there. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. And again, Donna, whenever you have availability, please join us because you are always welcome and you always have something to offer. So I thank you both again for being on with us. Audience, we are going to be signing off today, but please join us. We also tomorrow will be interviewing think of it offhand, but we have Greg, I think his name is, let's see what we have here.
Is it Reggie?
No, they do that show on Mondays.
Okay.
Tomorrow is the 23rd, Thursday the 23rd. We have Greg Curry. Greg Curry will be speaking out on his wrongful conviction from the 1993 riot. He will be on with his advocate. So join us tomorrow it will be at 12 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and we will have Greg Curry on with us. Thank you so much. Thank you, Dorothy.
Thank you,
Donna.
Donna.
Thank you,
thank
Leona.
You.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.